noticed many incidences of UFOs. And I did a study at NASA at a very high level with their physicists and scientists. Some of the astronauts have talked to me and other physicists outside of the agency to, you know, probe into the phenomena and look for answers.
How much have astronauts really told you? I've had some of the oddest responses, David, when I've interviewed astronauts. Some, even some that have been to the moon, really odd responses. How about you?
Well, the astronauts themselves, like even Edgar Mitchell, really couldn't, he couldn't conceive of the idea of a zero-mass spacecraft. He says if there's no mass, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And I look for zero-mass signals. He, like many classical physicists, don't accept the UFO phenomena because they're looking for that huge energy signal tagged onto a massive spacecraft, and they don't see it.
Yes, but are there any astronauts who, in fact, reported seeing UFOs?
Cooper, Gordon Cooper, I read his book, Leap of Faith. Him and I, he was on a Fox TV special on the Fox News in L.A. that ran after the X-Files grand finale with me.
Have you been told anything in private by any of them that goes beyond what we know?
The only, not by the astronauts, but John Schussler, who was an engineer on Gemini and also retired at NASA in 1998, the last thing he did is built the Advanced Propulsion Lab for NASA. He is now the head of MUFON. I'm speaking at Roswell, incidentally, and MUFON this summer, this month, in July 3rd in Roswell and July 16th at MUFON Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And Schussler is now the head of MUFON. So I asked him, what are you doing in the UFO movement? I mean, you're NASA, basically. Oberg used to work for Schussler.
Yes.
And Schussler will tell you on and on that many encounters that astronauts had with UFOs, in fact, he keeps reports on the sightings by the astronauts. And when he answered me, he said the reason he's in the UFO movement is he wants to understand their technology. He believes rocket science and rocket propulsion is ancient stuff that we need to get onto. He's very fond of my theory of converting mass into light, or changing the wave state of mass and allowing it to resemble the quality of a photon and attain the speed of light on tiny amounts of energy. I mean, he believes that's the only way it's possible.
All right, more calls, David. Here they come. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with David Sarita. Hello.
Hi, my name is Tammy. I'm calling from Ventura, California.
Yes, Tammy.
And actually, I'd like to ask a question, and then if I can, I would like to share something I saw last week.
Ventura,
yes.
You're just north of me.
Okay. Well, that's even better. Maybe you saw what I saw. Real quick question here. Could you explain why everything spins?
Thin?
Spins.
Well, what do you mean by that? What did you see that was thin?
Well, the galaxies and the universe, the planets.
Oh, that's a pretty wide question. They all do spin, that's true.
Oh, why does everything spin? I thought you said, why did everything thin?
No, spin.
Well, that's, again, everything has a different spin speed. Everything is in a wave-particle relationship in our universe. The brain is a wave-particle machine. The planet is a particle that is spinning around a wave around the solar system. The solar system is a collection of wave particles that spins around the galactic core every 250 million years. Everything is spinning, which is particles and waves. And those particle-related relationships have frequency, meaning how frequently they make a revolution. So when you study the wave-particle relationship of matter and you study the wave-particle relationship of light, you start to get your answer on how you go from mass into light state.
Okay.
So yes, everything's spinning.
Okay.
All right. Last Saturday, it was actually Saturday morning into Sunday. It was like 1:30 in the morning. This is amazing. I've been trying all week to get through on this. It was a meteorite. It was approximately 500 feet, I would say, actually by size, by like two palm trees high, two palm trees distance from me.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a glance of it as it was just coming down to the earth. Mm-hmm. It was huge, and it was very, very hot. It got my right cheek was just really, really hot. And it seemed to me like it landed maybe about 2 or 3 miles away. It had no sound effects whatsoever, and it had a tail on it 12 to 14 feet. It was a ball of fire. Within 3 hours, there's a glade of fire going on, which actually burnt, and it shut down lanes of Highway 101. It burnt 6,000 acres. They really never mentioned anything about it other than it burnt 6,000 acres.
You're convinced that started the fire?
Yes. Oh, yes. They evacuated Carpinteria and Montecito.
Wow.
And what dates are you looking at?
I'm looking at on the 5th. Actually, it was the 6th, okay?
Of
it was,
what?
Of this month. It was last week.
6th of June.
Yes. No,
she said a week ago.
And I've had... I'm sorry, Art. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, you said a week ago, virtually when I was doing this program, actually.
Yes, it was you, and you were talking to the astronomer. That's when the stars were all lining up.
Yes.
It was that night. Actually, it was the night after the one that happened that came down in Washington, the exact night right after that.
Wow, I heard about the one in Washington.
Okay, now I've asked seven different people here, and nobody has seen it. I'm just blown away.
Nobody has seen a meteoric impact. There's no hole. There's no crater.
Well, it's not that so much.
There's been no media on it. Nobody. Yeah. You don't even hear people talking it because it happened. It was huge.
Many should have seen it, right?
Oh, you bet. You bet. And within hours, that fire had started, and there's not been a word on that fire whatsoever about anything. It was just kind of like brought up to us, our attention, and then dropped.
Is the fire out now?
No, it was in Goleta.
Goleta,
that's north, just north of Santa Barbara.
Oh my God.
And I tell you, it has to have been seen by some astronomer, somebody, because when I seen it, it had probably a good minute before it got out of my vision, and actually there's a hill that goes over the coast there, and I thought, oh my God, it went over there to this, like, the camp.
Well, maybe in the center of that location where the fire occurred, somebody might want to take a stroll out and take a look for what might be there. That's
I know someone who lives out there. I'll have to call.
Pretty remarkable story, actually.
Really remarkable. I mean, there could be something like in the Betty Cash case. You had a UFO that was very hot and caused severe radiation burns. If you have heat on your cheek, do you have any like rashes or anything unnoticeable? I mean, different on your body right now?
No, she's now gone. But But that is remarkable. And
I'm going to check that area out because I know someone who lives up there.
In addition, she's right. Many would have seen it, so I'll watch my email and see if we can get confirmation of what she just said.
See, there's so much going on right now.
I know. That's the only way I know to follow up. If others have or saw that, and if there's confirmation for it, then we want to follow up.
Wow.
Okay, first-time caller line, you're on the air with David Sarita. Hello.
Yeah, Art and David, it's nice to talk to you.
Yes, sir, thank you.
I currently am a government employee, and I'm not going to say what branch I'm in or my name for my own, you know, for my own career purposes.
Yes.
But I can promise you, Art, that several years ago in the early 90s when I first started working for the government... I actually was one of those people who answered the phone at a local base, and when we received UFO calls, we were told to act like we were actually taking the information and ignore it and move on.
You were told to act like you were really taking the information and just forget it and move on, not really even make note of it.
Right, right. Like it wasn't even going on. You know, they said act concerned and then press on. But my question for David is what do you think about the time traveler theory?
It's a good question. I'm going to get you off the hook here, sir. I can hear you covering up the radio. Thank you.
Okay, thank
right,
you.
Uh-huh. That was somebody in security, a police officer now. Very, very, that's fascinating. I mean, the man, obviously in security, just told us that he was told to take calls and then just blow them off. I mean, make like you were writing down the information and blow it off. Can you believe that?
Well, it's interesting because Patrick Uskert and I, with the Venice UFO, we called the FAA, and in fact, we've taped this in the documentary. And the FAA took us really seriously. In fact, a week later, I called them, and they still remembered. and I sent them a copy of the DVD of the full, you know, editing job and zooming in close on the Venice UFO, and they're looking at it right now. So I don't know if they're brushing it off, but they did a radar search and found nothing from Santa Monica Airport or LAX to confirm the location and time of the UFO. So that would mean it's either invisible to radar, which is not surprising, or they just don't want to tell us that they had an incident on radar.
All right. Well, the second part of what he said was also pretty fascinating. A logical mind, considering the possibility of time travel, even the amount of energy we know is required to achieve time travel, mm-hmm. still has to imagine that if we don't blow ourselves up, someday we will find that power and we will achieve time travel. If that would be true, then it would be reasonable to have an expectation of time travelers.
I think there are two ways. The current approach with wormholes, I mean, look at Kip Thorne's book, you know, Black Holes and Time Warps. The energy required to create a wormhole to fold two points in space-time to go basically obviate the speed of light and
yes.
get there shorter
yes.
requires the energy, what's called the negative energy, of every sun in our galaxy, the energy they put out for a whole year. So that's 100 million suns. All of their negative solar energy for a whole year to make one wormhole with a narrow snout enough to fit a dime through. The wider that snout gets, the more energy required. These are ridiculous numbers, but and they're unattainable. I mean, no one can produce energy levels that high, but if you're zero mass, once again, you can do zero mass mm-hmm. wormholes on tiny amounts of energy, and therefore, once you figure out how to do zero mass time wormholes, yeah, you could move through time. You could. I believe time also is a wave-particle relationship. I mean, if you really look at time, the particle planet spinning around the sun once per year, that's a particle-wave relationship. So if you look at time in a wave-particle model, which I have done in my galactic clock, which is a clock I invented for measuring all wave-particle relationships in all four dimensions, I believe I can prove that every event has already happened in actuality. It's only time that inhibits us from moving forwards and backwards through those events. But they've all actually happened. In fact, Richard Feynman, the great physicist, did this experiment with an electron where he proved the same thing. He calls it the sum over history. For the electron, all events have happened already.
But some of what we observe with UFOs almost seems paranormal because